Signing to the midday sun, stopped to grin at the music he was playing on his broken mandolin.
Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Friday, the 27th of April. Very nice to thank God I have that on my computer at the bottom, where I would never know what date it is. It's the 27th of April, 15 minutes past the hour, and we're thrilled to have you with us on. Hey, it's a Friday. We're excited. So, a lot to talk about as always. We will get to it with our wonderful group this morning. Quick note that you were hearing the music of Steel Wheels coming in. They have a new album called Wild as We Came Here. Wild as We Came Here. Like you, Aaron. Just wild as we came here.
Which isn't very wild, but fine.
The Steel Wheels are going to be performing. That's right. Performing at Helsinki Hudson in Hudson on Saturday night. That's tomorrow night, which, according to my calendar, my computer, would be the 28th. And that's HelsinkiHudson.com. HelsinkiHudson.com. And we'll be hearing them coming in and out of the breaks. Or coming in and out of the breaks, as we're supposed to say. All right, let me introduce our panel to you. WAMC's Alan Sharkduck is with us. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Yeah, I had a little bit of a cold, but now it's getting all better. I decided not to come in and infect everybody in the room.
Thanks.
And collectively, we say thank you.
Thank you, Alan.
Yes, we're happy about that. But we are glad you are with us. That is fantastic. Also with us, former EPA Regional Administrator Judith Eng. Good morning.
Good morning. The last time I saw you, we were surrounded by 500 wonderful people in Page Hall. It feels a little different this morning, but I think the show will be good.
Yes, we have a lot to talk about and maybe even a little more upbeat. But it's going to be great. We had a great time last
week.
Congratulations,
Joe. That was terrific.
Well, thank you. You were just...
No, thank you.
No, thank you.
You did the heavy lifting on this.
It was very fun. We had a great time. Also with us, we have a good friend who hasn't been with us for a while, and I'll be honest with you, I really don't know why. I think it was just like I sometimes blank, and it was nothing. I hope you don't think like I just.
Here's
the honest reason. I just sort of forgot.
No, that's not the reason. You hate me, and it's very clear.
Chris Churchill is with us. We're thrilled to have Chris with us. He's always great. And I don't know. I was going through the Rolodex, and I was like, my computer Rolodex. And I was like, oh, wow, we haven't had Chris on in a long time. We have to have Chris on. So thank you.
Yeah,
I'm glad you're here.
Thanks for having me back.
Thank you very much. Aaron Pasitti is with us. Aaron is a professor of economics at Siena College, and it's always good to have you with us, sir.
Good morning. Good to be back.
Thank you. Good to have you back. All right, let's get to what's happening in the news, and surprise, there's a lot happening in the news, and we'll talk about all of that this morning. Let's begin with Bill Cosby. So the Cosby story is that you'll remember that he was on trial. The jury was deadlocked. It ended in a mistrial, and so he was retried. And yesterday, convicted on all charges, three counts of sexual assault in my hometown of Norristown, Pennsylvania, in Montgomery County, right outside of Philadelphia, 13 miles outside of Philadelphia. And he was found guilty. He was released on $1 million bail, awaiting sentencing, sentencing that could carry 10 years for each count in jail. He is an 80-year-old man, so we'll keep those things in mind. Obviously, we were also told that he would be appealing the court's decision. Also, the other part of the story, which is more of an asterisk than anything else, but was his lashing out at the prosecutors who were concerned that he could be a flight risk because he owns his own plane. And he said in no uncertain terms he doesn't have a plane, and called the guy a mean name. And that was that. So there's that aspect of the story as well. But when you see just someone who up until 5 years ago was considered a great icon in this country to be facing jail time is quite a reversal of fortune, isn't it? Alan?
Well, first of all, you know, it is a heartbreaker because he meant a lot to a lot of people in a lot of different ways. Okay, so we'll just leave that aside for a moment and say, on the other hand, justice prevailed. You know, he got what he deserved. This is terrible. And it has to do with the one thing that this entire panel has seen bring people under again and again and again, and that's just plain old arrogance. You get arrogant, you think you could do anything you want. That's what he did. This is an extraordinary story, and it's just awful.
It's not arrogance. He's a sexual predator. 62 women came forward saying that he sexually assaulted them or raped them. And so the number is probably higher because it's very hard to publicly come forward and share these stories. I listened very carefully to a rape survivor who talked about how over the years she was raped by Cosby 48 years ago. And as he got honorary PhDs and he got awards in the entertainment field, she was reliving that horror. And it's devastated her life and so many other women's life. You know, he's the accusation is he's been doing this for 50 years.
And if I can, yes. I just really want to go back to Judith on this. You are absolutely right about everything you're saying. I just said the same thing in terms of what you know, justice is prevailing here. Nevertheless, it is arrogance, Judith. Let there be no mistake about it. An arrogant person thinks they can get away with crimes.
Yeah, but I don't think arrogance involves slipping people drugs to...
Why not?
That's predatory.
Arrogance could be a small part of it, but it's something deeper than that.
Not a small part of it. If you think that you're America's hero and that you can do anything you want, and you are so arrogant that when you're giving your stand-up comedic routine, you stand up and you say, this is what we do. We put stuff into people. That's arrogance.
But he wasn't wrong about that. He could do anything he wanted. I mean, people, stories were floating around for years and years and years, and nothing ever came of them. These reports are out there. Yeah. There were news articles about these allegations, and he was still being treated as America's hero.
And let us not forget that, I mean, we have him on tape saying, this is what I did.
Yes.
You know? I mean, that's the thing about
and
this.
Once again, they didn't believe the women. There were non-disclosure agreements. We're hearing more and more. We all now, our lexicon is we all know what an NDA is.
Right.
And I believe the woman who was the central part of this case, Andrea Constance, she had an NDA. But the criminal trial and conviction, I think, supersedes
Which,
that.
Which, to your point earlier about all of the women, the 60 or 70 women that had
62
that had come forward, Andrea Constand beat the statute of limitations by days,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Before she was able to bring this case up. And the first time she brought it up, they decided not to prosecute it, and the second time they did. So, I mean, the only reason we got to this point is because of the and which brings up a larger point of why do we have statute of limitations on these
cases. This illustrates the need to change the law so that statute of limitations is amended. Because it often takes years for women and men, because men also are victims of sexual assault, to find the strength and the support to come forward. Not everyone reports the crime immediately.
But there is a, you know, I understand, I go with Alan's point here, though, that there is a, that I'm wearing a bulletproof vest. I can do whatever I want. I can walk in and the world loves me. I'm going to sell you pudding. I'm going to sell you Jell-O. I'm going to sell you my movies and my shows. And I can go and do all of this stuff. And none of this is going to hurt me because I'm wearing an iron shield.
That's not arrogance. That's a straight up abuse of power. And
yes.
I think.
And how do you distinguish between those two?
Arrogance is being self-righteous and just thinking that you're correct all the time. An abuse of power is taking your position to intentionally subjugate others to your will.
And I would say, Aaron, that one leads to the other.
Or there are elements of both, right?
Yeah, I don't think it's an either, mutually exclusive. I think he can be arrogant and also be,
Because we can use other words that we can't say on the radio to describe this behavior,
well,
too.
Well, it's sexual assault. We should not be gingerly around this. I mean, we all know many, many people who are arrogant, who are not sexual assaulters.
Yes, but how about all those people, Judith, that we know, who, the crooks in the legislature, the crooks in the government, who think that they can get away with it because they can do anything they want, and that's also arrogance.
Yeah, it's people with power think they're held to a different standard.
That's right.
But I think in the world of criminal justice, that may be true. It's true with people who have money. I mean, Trump signs how many non-disclosure agreements to keep women quiet?
Well, we don't know yet.
Right. But I think that's kind of a good issue of the day is what is the role of these NDAs to silence
crime
victims?
And you don't think that Trump is an arrogant somebody, which we can't say on the radio?
Of course, yeah. He's arrogant, but
and that his arrogance leads to these mistaken, terrible things that he does.
But you can look at financiers as being arrogant and thinking that they're always correct who don't engage.
I'm arrogant sometimes.
So
I'm arrogant. We're all arrogant,
but we don't.
We don't rape women and men. We drug them first.
Well, wait. You don't mean to say for a single second, do you, Judith, that the only reason, you know, that if you're arrogant, you have to commit a crime. I don't think that's true. But I am also saying to you that the reason a lot of these guys do this in the area of politics and or rape and the rest of it is because of their arrogance.
But I think this is a good reminder that the public persona that we see on TV shows and on TV is often not who these people really are. You know, me personally, I'm a little tired of hearing this described as sad. You know, oh, it's so sad that Cliff Huxtable is going to jail or all that. It's not sad. He's a criminal.
No,
you know?
It's good.
It's good. This is very good.
I was really happy yesterday that the jury convicted him.
He's
80 years old, and you're right. I heard that many times yesterday about, he's so sad and he's blind, and I get it, but, you know, 30 years ago, where were we? And he got away with a lot for a very, very long time.
And so did a lot of other people. And what's remarkable about this is that it was kind of the first, you know, rock to fall. And then after that, the whole cliff is coming down. And I think that's a really good thing. There's nothing. I mean, this is a positive. What happened yesterday is a positive thing.
And to whom it happened is also very positive, because you have somebody who has been culturally endearing. I mean, forget about this. Prior to this, he was very culturally endearing. He carried a lot of social capital. He's old. And the fact that there was little leniency shown or no leniency shown is a wonderful thing, because that really sends a signal to other people who might not have his cultural status about, oh, boy.
Right.
This could be problematic for me.
It took a comedian to make it all happen, too, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah, not the women. And it's a reminder that not all rapes are in a dark alleyway with a knife. You know, this is a pervasive part of our society, sexual assault and rape. And the more we recognize that, we can take steps to not only hold people accountable, protect people, and work with young people to point out that this is not acceptable behavior. The term I found interesting yesterday was the phrase I heard, Cosby survivors. Who would have thought of that?
Right. And many of them were in and outside of the court yesterday, and you saw their reaction to it of those survivors who do not have the luxury, because of the statute of limitations, of trying these cases and getting their day in court. Yes, Alan.
I'd just love to go back. I think it was Chris who just used the word cultural icon or something like that and asked the question, what do you think that means?
I don't think I called him a cultural icon, but I think it was Aaron.
But he was
a larger-than-life figure. I mean, he had, because of the role he played on TV, I think a lot of people thought of him as kind of this uber father.
Well, and he played that as a moral arbiter of going into and saying, of calling comedians and saying, I don't think you should swear on stage, and and going into the
pants, pull up your pants,
going into the African American community and young people and saying, put up your, you know, pull up your pants, be, you know, speak English, and going through this whole thing. He was, I mean, I'm not saying it's all bad, but he was judgmental. He was very judgmental. He would go out and much of his later work was this going into communities and sort of taking the moral high ground.
And being a role model on a TV show, an African-American doctor, professional.
And that did
life.
I mean, that
but
was
that
an
was
important
a role.
Show.
That was a role.
That's TV.
In real life. Right. He was a sexual predator. He is now convicted.
I played a nice family man on TV, but that's not who I am in real
and
life.
And it was a big deal to have a wealthy or affluent African-American family on TV at that point.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, but
and a
again,
doctor.
Yeah, he was playing
well,
a character.
Well, it would be today. I mean, you know, it's still it's still necessary, but it's but again, it's a character, and we're looking at, and it's hard to say something, you know, if it was a crappy show, we wouldn't be, you know, even talking about it, but it was a show that lasted for a very long time. We saw those kids grow
and it
up.
It was a good
and,
show.
And it was a good
right?
show.
And yeah. Felicia Rashad, was she a lawyer on the
yes,
show?
I think
you
so.
You know,
yeah.
It was a professional African-American couple, but it was fake. It was TV.
All right. Well, we're going to take a break, and then we'll come back. We can get up, go more on this. We have Alan Chartok, Judith Ng, Chris Churchill, and Aaron Pacitti. We will be back and continue our conversation after this short break. Again, panel at WAMC.org.
Hold on, it won't be long.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Judith Ng, Aaron Pacitti, and Chris Churchill. We just heard the music, as I mentioned earlier, the Steel Wheels, and they're going to be performing at Helsinki Hudson in Hudson tomorrow night. What I didn't mention is they're also going to be performing at Cafe Lena on Monday and Tuesday night. Mm, so you have lots of opportunities. Yes. Yeah, so Helsinki Hudson on Saturday night. And Steel Wheels will be at Cafe Lena in Saratoga on Monday and Tuesday night, which is the 30th and May 1st. So just make that note. All right, we have letters. So let us go to those. David says, Cosby is 80. He is blind. And he had $400 million. He is rich and famous. He will die of old age before he goes to any prison. His lawyers will file motions and appeals that will last years beyond his lifetime. Well, that's probably true, but his career is done.
Well, he belongs in prison. I don't care that he's 80. I am sympathetic if someone has cancer or something.
But I think his point is that he has the money to keep it rolling, so to keep him out
appeal.
Of prison for a while.
That's,
you know, a guilty verdict is still important.
Right.
You know, it still sends a message that he is guilty. Nobody can really deny it anymore or pretend that it didn't happen.
But he goes home to his mansion, and maybe he doesn't have a private jet, but he lives very comfortably.
No, but his wife does.
Yeah. You know, there was some debate. Why didn't he get brought straight to jail yesterday after the conviction?
And his wife and family were not at the trial.
I think his wife was, actually.
I
think she was there for many. She was there for many days. I don't know that
she was
there for the
not for the last one.
Bruce writes, he may technically not own a plane, but for years a Gulfstream with Camille painted in cursive in its tail has flown into Westfield Barnes Airport and has been here in the Albany Airport many times as well. Thomas says, regarding Cosby, use the right word. He's a rapist. He's a serial rapist. He is a criminal. Now he is a convicted criminal, and if justice is to be served, he should be put away for the rest of his life.
Agreed.
All right. Okay, those are the letters. We welcome yours. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. Okay, we're going to move on unless anybody has anything else on that story. All right, so let's talk about, I'm going to set Judith up here. Let's talk about our friend Scott Pruitt, who under an ethics cloud faces lawmakers. Quite a day for Scott Pruitt yesterday, although some feel that it went a little bit easier for him than it was expected, but
he was lucky that the Cosby verdict broke in the afternoon while he was testifying in Congress.
Because all coverage went right
shifted.
Off.
Yeah.
The head of the Environmental Protection Agency testified on Capitol Hill on Thursday. He's back today, is that correct?
I don't know.
Okay. He is on Capitol Hill, was on Capitol Hill yesterday in what turned out to be a day-long grilling over allegations of ethical infractions and lavish spending. The EPA chief, whose job may be hanging by a thread, delivered a typically lawyerly performance. As Democrats opened an aggressive, coordinated line of questioning on Mr. Pruitt's spending, housing arrangements, security team, and raises for political appointees, he stayed quiet and calm, never raising his voice or his temper, but rarely giving direct answers to those questions. Two things that seemed to, by the way, go Paul Tonko. He was all over yesterday.
Thank you, Paul Tonko.
Yeah, he got the morning questioning off to a start by asking Mr. Pruitt to answer yes or no to whether he had approved pay raises for two EPA employees that he brought with him from Oklahoma. Mr. Pruitt said he had delegated the authority to grant such approvals, or as he put it, there was delegation given in my authority. I was not aware of the amount, and I was not aware of the bypassing that was going on. That was a theme that emerged throughout his testimony yesterday, that passing the buck to either a staff or just no knowledge of the situation. And also, there was much contradiction in earlier statements that he had given.
So, repeatedly, either he deflected, which is now an Olympic sport in the Trump administration, and blamed his staff, both his political appointees and his career staff. So the question is he really that bad a manager that he doesn't know that a $40,000 soundproof security booth is being installed inside his office when just, you know, one or two floors away, there's what's called a SCIF, which is a secure room that he just has to walk down a few steps to do quiet and confidential phone calls. He knew he was flying first class. By the way, he's back in coach. That is one, I guess, little reform. He's back with us in coach, having really bad peanuts and warm soda and not enough legroom. But, you know, I'm not even going to go through the litany because we don't have a 3-hour show to go through all of his ethical transgressions. I think the piece in last Sunday's New York Times Earth Day edition was devastating for him because it showed that these ethical lapses started when he was in public service in Oklahoma. It didn't start when he came to Washington.
So two questions. One is that, because you brought this up last week, of it not so much when will he lose his job, but when will the indictments begin?
Right.
You know, that's one thing that you brought up last week. But also what we heard on the prelude to the testimony yesterday was that he felt that the White House was not backing him. He felt that the White House was moving away from him and was putting him out to dry.
So what I would always used to say when I was at EPA, when I was told, Judith, the White House is upset about this. And I would say, is it, you know, the White House is a building. Is it an intern or is it the White House counsel?
Don't want to upset that intern.
Who in the White House is upset? And here, I think everyone in the White House is very upset with Pruitt, except maybe not President Trump. I think he's being very obstinate. He's getting a lot of pressure from the fossil fuel industry to keep Pruitt in place. I think the key thing happened about a week ago when the deputy administrator, a guy named Andy Wheeler, was approved. And he's just like Pruitt. He represented coal companies. He's Pruitt light, and maybe with the good sense not to violate federal ethics laws. So I still think over time Pruitt will be shown the door, and this dreadful number two will continue his anti-environmental policies.
So I think it's worth pointing out that it's probably not just Trump. Mike Pence is bankrolled by the Koch brothers. So
right.
To pin this
good
all
point.
On Trump, I think misses a larger issue that Pence, again, part of the White House.
Yeah, not the
that,
intern.
You know, his political
president.
Career was saved by money from the Koch brothers, so he might be doing the quiet work behind the scenes to keep, Pruitt in office or deflect him from that. So I think putting it all on Trump is missing the point. I think Pence is working very effectively behind the scenes.
But,
and so I've got a question for you, Judith, that
I love it when we question each other. Yeah, Joe, is that okay?
I mean, you can argue that Pruitt's policies are completely regressive. They're bad for the country. They're bad for the economy. They're bad for the environment. But you can't get him out of office just because you don't like his policies. So is this focus on the ethics just kind of an end around to figure out ways to indict him for, you know, breach of some law or whatever?
Yeah, interesting question. I mean, I think Pruitt's policies are so much worse than his personal ethical transgressions.
Yeah, exactly.
While this hoopla is going on, he announced a new policy on what kind of science EPA can and can't use. I mean, it's reminiscent of the tobacco companies. So, you know, I think the ethics problems are a little bit of a sideshow, but they're so serious and I think illustrate actual violations of federal law, you know, staying in the condo for $50 a night. And in fact, the lobbying group did have business in front of the EPA. I mean, this is serious, but I think the policy problems that give us more air pollution and water pollution are far, far more important.
Right. So we watch this and we say, oh, you know, maybe this will bring him down. Maybe this will. But to your point, OK, but then who's next? Who then replaces him? And because those policies will probably still be enforced.
Yes.
By whoever goes into that.
Oh, yeah. It'll. I mean, with all of these guys, I mean, look at VA. They got rid of the...
Ronnie Jackson?
The guy before him.
Oh,
what was his name? Oh, it happened so many news cycles ago. Shulkin. So he claims that, you know, he was shown the door because he was fighting privatization. And then you get Ronnie Jackson, and then we'll get another person. I mean, I think they're just very good at recycling incompetent, ethically challenged people. It almost doesn't matter. I mean, they always put people in place who are vigorously opposed to the statutory mission of the agency.
Do you think the Democrats yesterday were so aggressive because they object to the policies, or do you think it's the ethics, it's actually the ethics violations or some combination of the two, I suppose?
Probably a combination, yeah. And they smell blood. I didn't see the hearings. I was driving from the Finger Lakes yesterday, but heard a little on the radio. Those hearing formats are terrible because they only have like 5 minutes per member.
Yeah, they're ridiculous.
And they talk really fast. Yes, no, yes, no, yes, no. And it's kind of easy to dodge. And I think Pruitt did a lot of dodging.
I think the senators do that. The senators want to say what they want to say, and they don't allow the person any time.
Right.
It was like that with Facebook hearings,
yeah,
too.
It's pure theater.
Right.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll go to more letters and go to more topics. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. We have some letters. I'll get to those. A lot of these are still on Bill Cosby. And then we'll move on to some other topics as well. Stuart says, clearly, Cosby is guilty and justice is speaking. That is good and right. I am comfortable, however, with the question of why it is a black man who is held to account when Weinstein and O'Reilly, who paid $37 million in one NDA, still walk free. Will these white men also be charged? Justice must be complete and race blind. I would like to hear your panelists respond. I think it is interesting in the Weinstein case because we've been hearing for a year, the charges were sort of in the works and pending, but we have not seen any charges.
I think it's the statute of limitations problem.
Yeah, I think it's more that than it is race. I just think the circumstances worked out where Cosby could be charged, and maybe that isn't the case with some of these other cases.
Laney says, abusers are often charming and beloved by others. It's part of what allows them to get away with it for so long and why the public disbelieves victims and survivors. Arrogance plays a role in thinking that nothing will happen to him, and it's abuse of power and it's rape culture. It's toxic masculinity and it's sexism that make women and others targets of abuse. Nancy reminds us that another TV show, The Apprentice, gave another arrogant person the cover of a created persona, which is mistaken by many fans for the real purpose, or for the real person,
I think if people want to hear a nice 3-minute summary of what's happening with male culture, I'm not on their payroll, but the band Proto Martyr on their new album has a song called Male Plague, and in 3 minutes they capture everything that's wrong with this culture.
Great. We're learning a lot about music.
All right. So let's move on to some other stuff. And we welcome your letters panel at WAMC.org. And we have the Korea Talks, of course. Korea Talks began as Kim Jong-un crosses to the south sides to the south side of the DMZ. This was quite extraordinary. Kim Jong-un on Friday became the first North Korean leader to set foot in South Korean-controlled territory, starting a historic summit meeting with the South's president that will test Mr. Kim's willingness to bargain away his nuclear weapons. Mr. Kim crossing the line at the heart of the world's most heavily armed border zone, a prospect that seemed unthinkable just a few months ago, was broadcast live in South Korea, where a riveted nation sought to discern the intentions of the North's 34-year-old leader. So for the South Korean president, who has placed himself at the center of diplomacy to end the nuclear standoff with the North, the meeting presents a formidable task, finding a middle ground between a cunning enemy to the North and an impulsive ally in the United States of America. Alan.
Well, you know, I've been very interested in the narrative that's going on about China. There are those who are writing in their papers and their columns that China is very angry that this is going on, and yet I see no proof of that. I think it's quite the opposite. I think the whole thing is being orchestrated by China. I think that they are very happy about this. They're doing extraordinarily well in terms of, I'll get to Aaron Pasitti on this one, in terms of their economy, and they don't want to see North Korea screwing it up. So reluctantly, they came along and they said to North Korea, you know, you do it, get it done. And they're getting it done right now. And remember, even if they get rid of their nuclear options, you got China sitting there with an awful lot of firepower.
I still think we have to acknowledge, though, this is really good news, right?
Yes,
I mean, this
absolutely.
Is this
yeah.
is like
terrific.
the world yeah. is getting safer, at least in one small part of it, and that's a tremendous accomplishment. You know, right. no matter how it happened or who's pulling the strings, you know, when we were. I've been on this show when we were talking about the possibility of missiles hitting California and all sorts of terrifying things. And you know, this is great. This is
okay,
this is
Chris,
terrific.
Then answer this question, if you will. Why is he coming over? Why all of a sudden do we see this change?
I don't think we can get into Kim Jong-un's mind. You know, that one of the things that people are asking is, does Trump get credit, to deserve credit for this, or who's, you know, but who knows who he's completely mercurial. I don't know why he's doing what he's doing. I don't think anybody does but him. But it's still good news, right? I mean, how could it not
absolutely,
be?
Absolutely.
If it
great
sticks.
News.
If, you know, we
right.
all,
there's
we
a reason
all
you can be skeptical
stick.
About it for sure.
Because they've been there before. But what happened overnight was the two leaders said that they declare an end to war this year with a common goal of complete denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. I mean, everyone is for that. We just want to make sure it sticks and it's real. And I think this is I agree with Chris. It's an extremely positive step. And I agree with Alan. I mean, China is probably casting a very big role on this. And, you know, whatever gets them not to use nuclear weapons,
sure.
we're all for it.
But they're not giving up their intercontinental ballistic weapons or their more conventional arms, which poses the most immediate threat to South Korea and Japan. That's still a major step forward.
Yep.
And I think what, to Alan's question about why is this happening, I think Kim has alluded to the fact that the South Korean President Moon would be embarrassed to see some of the infrastructure in North Korea, I mean, in Pyongyang, but forget about, you know, ignoring the countryside. So I think Kim probably realizes that the sanctions are hurting and to keep peace within the country, which is already in a lot of areas broken out into these black market economies, that North Korea might be reaching an economic breaking point where people just have these mini market economies operating on the side, which poses a huge threat to Kim's power. So if he can get rid of some of those sanctions and kind of quell that very quiet economic dissent, then that could be a huge win in keeping the Kim dynasty in place.
So how does he avoid what happened in Germany? That's an interesting question, because, you know, once the first brick came out of that wall, it was over.
Yeah, I think he's, to go back to what Aaron was saying, I think we hear stories about his people being malnourished mm-hmm. and their height is not what it should be and all these sorts of things. You can only keep that down for so long.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Eventually, you're going to have some sort of uprising or some sort of revolution. And he probably feels like, you know, they need to change things. And this is one path to doing it. The German question is a good one. I mean, but that's what we said about China too. We thought, well, if they adopt some aspects of capitalism, they'll never be able to keep the lid on their society. But they have been able to. So
that's a very good point. It's a very good point.
All right. Let's see. Do we want to? Anybody have anything else on that? No, we're good. Okay. Let's move on then. Making very good time today. You're all being very good.
Too good, right? You got to find more stuff.
No, I'm good. I'm good. We're fine. We have a few minutes before the break, and then we'll get letters and we'll be fine. We'll get all of this in. You know, there's still reverberations from the president's Fox and Friends interview yesterday morning, 33 minutes long. President went on. One of the things that I thought was interesting, well, first of all, there's an article in the Boston Globe that says that many experts and people within the White House say it was ill-advised.
Well, you're not going out on a limb with that one.
You think?
That's a conservative statement.
Yeah, you think?
John Dowd, I'm so glad I'm out of here.
Wow. There was also some question as to the anchors at the end saying, well, don't you have to go, Mr. President? We know you probably have a busy day, Mr. President. And they were saying, he didn't want to get off the air. He would have gone on for another hour. And I believe it was Wolf Blitzer saying, okay, but I've been on the receiving end of that. And it's normally then people within the White House just barraging the producer saying, get him off, get him out, you know, we're done.
The faces of those three Fox anchors.
It was pretty funny.
They looked really both kind of stunned and hostage situation. And I mean, I'm not familiar with them, but they looked very uncomfortable with how this was unfolding.
So that's a great point. And there's probably a reason for it, which is they know what their jobs are, which is to make the guy look good.
And he wasn't.
And there they are sitting. There he is sitting there. They are sitting there knowing that he's you know, devolving.
To their credit, though, they did get him to talk about some of the big subjects that are out there, you know. So they did kind of steer him at times toward subjects that obviously the White House would prefer he not be talking to.
When he was claiming that Michael Cohen is not really his lawyer, even though a week or two ago, it's, oh my gosh, the attorney-client veil is pierced. The woman, I'm sorry, I don't know her name on the panel. I'm not going to say she's a reporter because they don't really seem
she's
like
a host.
Reporters. She's a host, right?
Yeah.
The morning host. She jumped in and said, well, you know, you're defending Cohen. Why is he taking the Fifth? And that's when Trump said, well, it's because of his business deals. I mean, you could hear the sound of Michael Cohen under the bus. Beep, 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 beep. The lawyers could not be happy.
But even worse, you could hear the sound of Trump under the bus.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the more that Cohen gets crossed, the more likely it is to flip.
I just want to point out, I know we're short on time, but I don't think Rudy Giuliani as the new lawyer is having a calming effect on the president.
No. Well, so there's this great, in this article from the Boston Globe that I mentioned, Nancy Gertner is a retired federal judge who teaches at Harvard Law School and said, he's unmoored. It's the only way to describe it. But I don't disagree with that assessment. However, in my viewing of it, he just seemed really angry. I mean, he just was screaming into the phone.
It's Michael Cohen. He knows what, you know, Cohen, they announced that they have, what, 16 devices that they took from Cohen, old Blackberries and phones. And Trump knows what is on those phones and those ancient Blackberries. I think he's just really quite concerned.
Does anybody want to go back to the first discussion about Cosby and the arrogance word as it applies to the president?
No. I don't.
I think
incompetent. Could be you don't
think
synonym.
You don't think this president is arrogant and thinks that everything he does is automatically okay?
Yes, but I think every president is arrogant. I don't think you run for that job unless you're an arrogant.
No, you have to have the ego the size of, you know, I mean,
I mean, he might be more so, but I think they're all, you know, they're all arrogant.
Well, that's a little too brash. I mean, look, everything is comparable. Everything is subject to comparison. And certainly, when you take Obama, he was not in the class of arrogance that this president is.
No, but I don't think humility was his strong point either. I mean, I know as a personal, like, I know that I should not be the leader of the free world. And I would never, like, if anyone ever suggested that I should be, I would laugh him out of a room. You know, like, you have to have some sort of massive ego to think that you should be the leader.
I can rule the world. Yeah. Yeah.
So you and I, Chris, are not arrogant.
Oh, we might be arrogant, but I'm not arrogant enough to think I should be president, I guess.
All right, let's take a break. We'll leave it there. Ray's just screaming in the other room. So go over there.
Guy is so arrogant.
Ray arrogantly wants to do the news and inform the public with facts from his perspective.
Well,
cookie dough.
We'll be right back after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable on this Friday morning. Happy Friday to you all. 8 minutes past 10 o'clock, listening to Fair City Fire, playing at the Linda tomorrow night. And you can find out more by going to thelinda.org, Fair City Fire, and they're at the Linda tomorrow night. Okay, let us go. We have some letters. We'll do those, and then we have other things to talk about. We have a lot of other things to talk about, so let's go. Crystal. About Pruitt. I'm wondering whether the demos, whether the Democrats are grilling Pruitt. Actually, let's see. See, this is the whole thing about pre-read your letters, but I should pre-read this one too. I'm wondering whether the Democrats who are grilling Pruitt actually voted yes for his confirmation. Shame, shame if they did. And anyone who has descendants who have to put up with the consequences of these polluters.
I think virtually every Democrat, with one or two exceptions, voted against the Pruitt confirmation, and with good reason, because of the tremendous public health damage that he's done in just over a year. I mean, he's already repealed 20 major EPA regulations and has over 40 in the queue to be repealed. Amazing in 1 year.
And now, moving on to a few letters regarding the president and Korea. This from Andrew. The meeting of the two Korean leaders can be acknowledged as a Trump success. It can be said his method was foolhardy, but more effective results than any previous president.
I agree with that. I mean, I think a lot of people elected Trump because he was going to be unconventional. And clearly what's been happening over the past few decades hasn't worked. And maybe it's time to try something new to shake it up and see if it worked. Now, obviously, the potential for this to backfire and for the fallout to be really nasty is elevated. But no, sure, unconventional is good now.
Yeah,
I like that.
I think Aaron's right. I think a lot of presidents, because the risks were so high, were very unwilling to be risky. And I think President Trump is willing to be risky and willing to be bellicose.
Yeah.
And that may backfire eventually, but in this case, it may have shook things loose a little
bit. Well, the other interesting thing is now you have the Bolton problem, who wants to go to war with North Korea. And I don't know how that jibes with Trump's outreach for diplomacy.
You also have the president even backing out, or not backing out, but backing off at least, saying, well, we don't even know if this meeting's really going to take place.
Yeah, I think the best thing is for this meeting not to happen, especially given Bolton's role. And Chris, don't use the phrase backfire when you talk about Korea, please.
Do I?
But, you know,
literally.
Let's hope this sticks. This is, you know, it's a welcomed development. Let's hope it's real.
And then Dan writes in a note with a subject line, North South Korea peace consequences. If peace and denuclearization means Trump's reelection, that then so be it. It may be the price worth paying for this result. However, as cynical as it may sound, Could it be that the clever Chinese and Koreans that they chose to make happen during Trump's presidency because he would be more easy for them to deal with during 8 years and manipulate than, say, a Joe Biden or a Ronald Reagan? Could it be that Trump's consistent erratic behavior is attractive to them? Alan?
Well, you know, it beats me. I just don't know. You know, it's so tough when you think about the kinds of people who are involved in all of this. Bolton is a terrible man, in my opinion, right?
Yes, terrible. I agree.
But
okay, we're on common ground.
But if you ask Bolton and the president, as has just been suggested on the panel, is what they have done producing results, they would say yes. And if you gave them a lie detector, it would say yes. However, the risk is so great that it is beyond anything that we can imagine.
Well, let's remember, you know, relations with North Korea have not been good for some time. But then Trump, you know, really raised the tension and raised the stakes with calling, you know, using the phrase Rocket Man and kind of picking a fight.
Yeah.
So he kind of elevated the risk, and now he's bringing it back down. I would like to go on the record for the entire panel, if I can, and say anything that prevents nuclear war is a good thing. So for whatever right. reason, if it can prevent nuclear war,
right,
fantastic. But we do have to remember that it wasn't long ago that Trump
my button is bigger than your button.
Yeah, and was really saber-rattling and made us all especially very nervous, especially my relatives on the West Coast in California.
Yeah.
So with regard to you know, a second Trump term, I don't think that yes, foreign leaders see him as being erratic. I think foreign leaders also see him as being exceptionally playable, in that if you appeal to the right part of his personality, you can get him on your side yeah. and make him your puppet, for lack of a better term,
or
at least have much more friendly relations with him. Putin's doing it.
Macron.
I'm not sure that the average American voter votes based on what's happening in North Korea
right.
or
no,
South
right,
Korea.
Right.
And I am also a little bit skeptical of the idea that this is somehow that China's happy about this. I mean, maybe they are. Maybe there's something going on that we don't see. But if you read the news stories out today, there's a lot of talk about South Korea spending a lot of money to help North Korea with its infrastructure and all mm-hmm. sorts of things like that. None of that would really be good for China, because North Korea would become less dependent on China and because would need them less.
I don't think North Korea makes up. I don't think. I mean, yes, China supplies North Korea with a lot of oil, but I don't think that's a major export market for China.
It's not so much that, but they have control over the country. They can almost play
leverage,
them like a puppet,
sure.
and if they lose that, I don't know. Yeah. It's complicated. It's obviously complicated.
Alan,
but.
Well, for a change, I don't agree with Chris, who I have great admiration for. No, I just truly believe that China is on top of this one, and North Korea is not an important issue for them, except to destabilize the region. And I think they're winning. Let's all remember, they are winning in every region, in Africa and everywhere else. They just don't need North Korea screwing it up.
Yeah, you might be right. Yeah. It's just hard. It's hard to know, but I don't know.
Switching gears a little bit, I'll be curious to see how it goes today with Angela Merkel, who's in the White House for a three-hour working session. I think the dynamics is going to be a little bit different than the bromance.
A three-hour working session, although only 20 minutes with the president. Is that correct?
And where's the state dinner?
No state dinner, of course. But they will do a press avail. And I just can't wait for Saturday Night Live or some comedy show to have Trump and Macron's dynamic and then Trump and Angela Merkel dynamic side by side.
Well, what do you think it is? Judith, do you think it's something to do with, you know, gender?
Yes, I think that is certainly part of it. And that, you know, she's not willing to play along the way Macron played along. But Macron was interesting. I'm not sure what I think of his theatrics. You know, he was so loving and
he kissed
and happy. Yes. And the whole bromance thing was interesting. And then Macron went to Congress the next day and spoke out about climate change and diplomacy, and there's no such thing really as fake news when it's credible reporting. So, total opposite of what he said to Trump's face.
So maybe I've missed it, Judith. Maybe I've missed it, but he did get up before Congress, and he really let him have it, but he did it. So where have the tweets been from the president about what he said to Congress, what Macron said to Congress?
I may have missed it too, Alan. I don't think there have been tweets.
No, well, I didn't see any.
My favorite tweet on this, though, was from Madeleine Albright, who said, "It has been too long since the president delivered a speech in Washington about the need to defend democracy and support international cooperation. Thank you, Emmanuel Macron." all right. Let's go to a couple quick stories here. One is, when I say quick, I mean that's how long it's going to take me to find the story here. We got numbers this morning. GDP, yes?
Yeah. So economic growth, as measured by gross domestic product, went up 2.3% in the most recent quarter, which is below average, but healthy. The interesting thing is that compared to – it's been in decline, so the economy is growing, but at a slower rate. And at the end of the fourth quarter in 2017, it was 2.9%. So for a while, I've been saying that Trump's threats of a trade war, the uncertainty that he's creating, which leads to stock market volatility, is going to have a dampening effect on economic growth. And I don't want to make too big a deal out of one quarter's numbers on GDP, but – I wouldn't be surprised if that trend continues as businesses become increasingly uncertain about the domestic and global economic environment and start slowing investment and hiring. So this might be the first step down that very ugly path.
They're just breaking news. Well, let me just say this and I'll say the breaking news. But there was do you in any way think that this is a preliminary glance of how the tax cuts will affect consumers and affecting businesses?
It's so tough to tell. My guess is that no, that these type of tax cuts have very little effect on GDP. That they have a huge effect on corporate profits. They have a huge effect on shareholder dividends. Those primarily go to the wealthy. The wealthy represent an enormous amount of purchasing power, but a remarkably small part of the population. So these tax cuts will have very minimal effects on GDP, and to the extent that they do, it'll likely be close to zero or have growth slowing effects.
And Aaron, while we're on the subject, could you just sort of tell us what's going on with the market right now?
Honestly, I have not been paying attention. It seems to have stabilized a little bit after the roller coaster rides recently. I think investors are starting to process this uncertainty, and that's probably already priced into a lot of market prices. I think the bigger threat to stock market volatility right now is that the Federal Reserve is going to be raising interest rates. And without getting into the exceptionally boring mechanics of how bond markets and equity markets work, Fed raises interest rates, which they're telegraphing, that stock prices will very gradually start coming down, and we'll see that correction that people have been predicting for quite some time. A further correction.
I just want to point out that this morning's economics report also documented massive increase in federal government spending. So where are the deficit hawks? I mean, I'm not upset by that, except a good chunk of that is military spending. But federal government spending off the charts.
Judith, and it costs money to drain the swamp.
You know, see, this is the thing that a lot of people miss is that it's not that Republicans and Democrats are against government spending. What they say in public might convey a different message, but when you look at their actual policies, neither of them are averse to government spending. It's a matter of who gets that spending.
Well, the Freedom Caucus would shut down the federal government because they were concerned that the balance sheet was not working out. I mean, I do think the federal deficit is a major problem, and it always gets worse under Republican administrations.
I think there are Republicans who are legitimately concerned about it, but they don't have a guy in the White House who's legitimately concerned about it. Right. So there's what's the point of them speaking up on it? I mean, they can speak up on it, but it's fruitless to try to
I'm just pointing out the inconsistency. I mean, during the Obama administration, they were willing to shut down the government over government excessive federal spending, and now it's one big swamp party.
One of the items that just came across the wires is a House panel released its report on Russian election meddling, saying it found no evidence that the Trump campaign was involved. Democrats have dissented. No real surprise here because
it's Devin Nunes.
Right. They closed down the investigation. Their conclusions are certain to be attacked by Democrats on the committee, who have accused the Republicans of prematurely closing the investigation and failing to conduct it with the rigor that the subject called for. Out of a desire to protect President Trump, the committee also released dissenting views from the Democrats. It's a 250-page report that was released just a few moments ago.
So aren't they cutting their own throats? We see what's coming in this election. We see what these results of these special elections have been. Don't they have any sense that this is really poison for them?
It's Devin Nunes. He doesn't know what he's doing. He's not thinking as far ahead as you are, Alan. He's not thinking of his own party's survival in the midterms. He's just carrying the water for Trump Inc.
That's right. And you can believe he is doing what the White House wants him to do. But it's very dumb for the Republicans to be playing this game.
And let us note that the Justice Department special counsel investigation is continuing, and the Senate Intelligence Committee is moving forward with its own inquiry. So it's not as if we are done on this subject. Let's talk about solar power, because I promised Judith I would.
Thank
you.
Go
ahead.
So follow up to last Friday's great climate change panel, I just want to let people know that there's an amazing workshop on solar tomorrow at the Gilderland Public Library called Solar Future, Solar Farms. Thank you to the Gilderland Public Library for sponsoring it. The two amazing speakers are Dr. Richard Perez, a real international expert on solar energy out of SUNY Albany, and Dennis Fair, who owns a local solar company. He's going to talk about how solar farms work and how you can participate. I will be moderating the panel. I'll open it up with some really fun, light climate change chit-chat, and then turn it over.
Some climate change jokes.
I'm going to do a five-minute set.
Yeah. Tight five.
Yeah, I'm no fun.
Tight five, right.
I'm no fun. So I'll open it up, turn it over to these two experts. People can bring questions. There'll be companies there that sell solar panels in the Capital District, and it's free, open to the public, 1 o'clock to 4 o'clock tomorrow at the Gilderland Library. Thank you, Gilderland Library.
Excellent. Anybody have anything else going on? All right. We're out of time, but thank you to everybody for being here. Alan, thank you. I hope you feel better.
Well, I'm already better. This whole morning has made me better.
Hydrate and rest.
Alan, did the panel make you feel better?
They did.
Yeah. See, that's what I love.
It's our job.
We're healing.
It's the healing powers.
Healing folk.
Healing and restorative powers of this program. See, in action.
The power of love.
Alan, be well. Judith, have a great event. Thank you very much for being with us. She said last week she was going to be the Paula Poundstone at our event. I'm sure she'll do the same at the Gilderland Library. Chris Churchill, great to have you back. Well, don't worry. I won't forget you. We'll invite you back next week.
All right.
Aaron, see you next week as well. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.